Welcome to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast, where we help break the silence surrounding miscarriage, stillbirth, and infant loss. Some of the content may be graphic or triggering, but our goal is to help provide healing, hope, and education to the community. Hello, welcome to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. I'm Sydney Rashidzada, along with my lovely co-host, Miss April Rutledge. April, say hello.
Hello, Sydney.
Oh, good. We're not muted this time. It's been a little while. It's been a minute since we've gotten to do an episode of this podcast, hasn't it, April?
It has, but you know, everybody thinks that summer is going to be a break from being busy, but it's just a different kind of busy.
Absolutely. It's crazy, and I feel like it's gone by. I went on a big European vacation with my family.
I love seeing all the pictures. I was following it. I was so excited. You guys went so many awesome places.
We did. We went and saw all the places. We brought my mother along, so that was fun. And, you know, we all survived and had fun, and jet lag is real. That's all I have to say about that. But like you said, we always have all these great big plans and they don't always come to fruition. But I'm happy to be recording with you today, and I'm really happy to have a wonderful guest on our podcast. Her name is Courtney Halliday Wise. So welcome, Courtney.
Thank you for having me.
And welcome, Courtney.
Yeah, I love these podcasts, these episodes in particular, where we get to have women come on, or men, and share their stories surrounding loss, because that's why we do this, is to break the silence surrounding these issues and to let everybody know who's going through this or know someone who's going through this pain that they are not alone. And so thank you so much for volunteering to come on and share your story. We really, really appreciate your openness and your vulnerability, Courtney. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
And so with that being said, we would love it if you would share a bit of your story with us.
Okay. So my story starts in 2015 when my husband and I first met in 2014. We got pregnant not long after we were together. This was my second pregnancy, our first together. Everything was going normal as far as we knew. And then just that day on February 20th, I kind of just felt really crampy, uncomfortable. I called my doctor and he just kind of blew it off and said that my uterus was expanding. That's what the pains were, which I was like, okay, well, didn't feel it the first time. Maybe it's just something new, the more pregnancies you go through. And later that day in the evening, ended up going to the hospital and had a bulging sac. And so they're deal was they were just going to kind of leave me laying on my back for about 4 weeks if we could get a little further along.
And how far along were you at this point?
I was 20 weeks.
20, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so I think for a little bit I fell asleep, because I know my mom and my aunt and all of them were with us, and everybody kind of went away when I kind of woke up, and once the pain started again and my water broke. And I told her my water broke, and the nurse just kind of lifted the blanket. Her eyes got big. She shut the blanket down, and she walked out the door. And so I was like, okay, well, what happened? And my husband was too scared to look. And then next thing I know, a different nurse comes in with that one behind her, and she was like, oh, he came out essentially when my water broke, and I didn't even know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she just kind of put him on my chest, and he lived for 2 hours and 10 minutes. But since he was 20 weeks, we knew they weren't going to do anything at that point. And so by that time, we just kind of kept me and my husband in there. We kind of invited family to come and see him while he was still alive. So they did that. And then we were able to keep him with us for 24 hours. And so I'm very glad that we were able to do that with him.
Wow. So that was, talk about that, there was no warning. It just kind of happened on its own.
Like I said, this was my second pregnancy. My first, I had him at 29 weeks, but that was a very different hostile situation than when I had him. So that's why I thought that happened. With Silas, I just don't feel like we had a very good doctor. I don't feel like he paid attention enough, and it was just kind of pushed as a, oh, it's normal, you're fine. And even up at the hospital when I had him, I saw my doctor once. And then he came in after I had him and was like, I'm sorry this happened. And then I never saw him again.
Were you seeing a high risk OB?
No, he was out of St. Anthony's. At the time we had Blue Cross and Blue Shield, Blue Advantage or something. So it was nobody at the time took what we had. And so I feel like we kind of just went with the first doctor that we saw. I know we went with the first doctor that we saw. And I mean, my appointments were always barely 10 minutes. They had no records. I had to see a urologist and they were they have no records of your pregnancy. They said, oh, she lost the baby. So we got rid of all her files.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty much how that went.
And you said your first child was born at 29 weeks.
Yes. Yeah. He was 2 pounds, 8 ounces. He was on the ventilator for the first 5 or 6 weeks. And then he was only in the NICU for about 7 weeks, just needing to gain weight and all of that. So
you were, at that point, you had already been through the trauma of a complicated premature birth. And so for that doctor to be that dismissive, it's just crazy to me.
We definitely learned our lesson on learning how to pick a better doctor. But like I said, with the insurance, he was the only one in the area close enough that took it. And so we went with him, and unfortunately it just didn't go as planned as it should have been. But at least at that point we knew what we needed to look for and look for somebody else. So 6 months after we lost him, we got pregnant with our now 6-year-old. And so we had a different doctor, did the stitch on the cerclage, did the shots, still have her at 29 weeks.
Oh, wow.
She was 212, but with her, I had 4 rounds of steroids. So she literally, once she was born, they were like, she's fine. She just has to gain weight. All the steroids help. So we call her our little Roy baby because she's always kind of been stronger than she should have been.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, she's super strong.
She is very much so. And then I got the birth control in my arm. We left that, kind of debated for about 4 years whether we wanted to try again. And then last year decided, okay, this is our year. We're going to try. So we got pregnant in the beginning of the year. And a couple weeks after we found out, we miscarried at 8 weeks, which, like I said, was new to me. I had never lost one that early. So, I mean, I didn't know what to do or what could have caused it. We went through that, kind of dealt with the healing. I don't want to sound heartless when I say it, but it was kind of easier to just get the DNC done and move on, because I'm kind of that type of person where if, as long as I can keep my emotions on the back burner, I can function.
Yeah.
And so we did that, and then we were just like, okay, whatever happens, happens. And we got pregnant I had my DNC in May, and then we got pregnant in July with Charlie Joe. And amazing doctor, was seeing a specialist with her, had the cerclage put in, was doing the shots. Everything was completely normal until it wasn't. And in December, probably around the 14th or 15th, I went to the specialist and my cervix was starting to open. So he decided they were going to go ahead and put me on bed rest at 24 weeks, which we knew was going to come eventually. We just didn't expect it that soon. And so she was breech that week. And he said there was a slight concern on her umbilical cord, but it wasn't enough that we needed to worry about it because it still had blood flow and was still working completely fine, which my husband brought up the other day because he had a dream and I had completely forgot all about that. And so then I was on bed rest for about 2 weeks and then started to feel uncomfortable. It wasn't really like contractions. It was cramping and uncomfortable. Went to the hospital, told them how I was feeling. They did the exam, said I was fine, hooked me up to a machine, said I wasn't contracting, and sent me home. Never did an ultrasound that day. So I go back the day after Christmas. I went about 1 p.m., was still cramping. Cramps were a little bit worse, and it was kind of the same thing, just got told, oh, well, not all pains or contractions or labor, and never did an ultrasound that time, just checked me and was like, okay, you're still good, you can go home. And that evening, after doing Christmas festivities with the family, came home and went to the bathroom and was like, nope, we have to go. Go back up to the hospital, and it just from there, it was just a cluster.
And how many weeks were you at this point?
I was 26.
Okay.
And it just, within the span of 30 minutes, it was them, me telling them she was breech, so I didn't know where she was positioned. That was the first time in those 3 days that I had an ultrasound.
Oh, wow.
Only because they wanted to see where she was. And it gets pretty dramatic from there, so I don't know if details
as whatever make a you're difference. Whatever okay. You're willing to share, really.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a very open book with it. They called the on-call doctor, called my doctor after they spoke with the on-call and just told him that I was there and I was having issues and they were going to monitor me. And next thing I know, they said they're going to take me to the operating room just in case something has to happen. So I'm in the bed freaking out in pain. My husband, they make him stand outside the door of the operating room. Not once did they ever let him in. So when I first get in there, they snip the cerclage and take the pessary out. The doctor actually tries to make me push. So he's pushing on me with the forcep things or whatever, I'm assuming, still inside, trying to make me push, trying to have them pull on my legs as I'm screaming. And then he's just like, no, it's not going to work. She's only out of four. Just put her to sleep and we'll open her up.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah. So after all of that and doing that, like I said, my husband's still outside and he knows nothing. So they put me to sleep, do what they have to do. And then I wake up, I'm asking how she is. And they're just like, she's upstairs. I'm like, okay, where's my husband? They're like, oh, he went up there with her. I knew nothing. So I call him once they get me in the room and he's like, where are you? They won't tell me anything. I don't know where you are. She's fine. She was doing fine. She's just majorly bruised. Her face was bruised. Her chest was bruised. And I don't know if that's from the force of him trying to make me push her out. And so we were a little concerned about that because even the NICU didn't understand why she was that bruised. But I know when I was talking to the nurse and I asked how everything went, she said when they pulled her out, the umbilical cord just snapped.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know. I don't know what all went wrong. She was perfectly fine the first day. And then all of a sudden the next day she quit having a urine output and her kidneys pretty much just failed. I ended up getting some type of respiratory infection after the surgery, and then my C-section got infected, which we didn't find out till after I left. So I didn't get to see her for 3 of the 7 days she was alive because they wouldn't let me down in the NICU. And then, so she was born on December 27th. On January 3rd, we got a call from the doctor in the morning saying she had developed 2 brain bleeds on both sides. And so we just decided at that point, because she was swelling so much, that there was no turning back from that point. And so we kind of made the decision we would go up there and kind of just take her off of support so she didn't get worse. So we did that. She lived for about 6 minutes off oxygen and took her last breath in my husband's arms. And then let her go to the funeral home. Woke up the next morning with blood all over me, not knowing where it came from. I thought I just bled out of my pad because, you know,
yeah,
it seems normal. And so I got up, took a shower, thought everything was fine. And then I told my husband, I was like, hey, look at my incision. And he opens it, shoves the towel down, and was like, you're like spewing blood.
Oh my gosh.
Out of your stomach. So we call my doctor, go in, and he's like, they sent me over to the hospital to do surgery. If I wouldn't have gone in that day, there's no telling what would have happened. So we had the surgery, told them I needed out. This is the day after she passed. So go in that Tuesday, have surgery that night, told them Wednesday, I need to be gone by 12 o'clock. Her visitation's at 3. So I told them, do whatever you need to do. I left at 12. We left the hospital, came home, got ready, and went straight to the funeral home to have her visitation.
Oh, wow. When you say it was a cluster, you weren't lying.
And that's putting it mildly. That's like,
wow.
That's a goat rope Charlie Foxtrot if I've ever heard one.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. What was your daughter, what was her official cause of death? Was it the kidney failure?
We didn't do an autopsy. I, at the time, worked in a funeral home as a removal tech.
Uh-huh.
I know what babies look like after an autopsy, and I did not want to do that to her, knowing that my kids would want to see her.
Yeah.
So we knew it was the kidneys. We knew her kidneys weren't functioning. We knew with the swelling from all the fluids, because they had her on a max on everything, including morphine. Mm. And I had gone to my OB for my checkup, and he had said that he went down and saw her in the NICU and noticed, I don't know what the blood pressure medication was, and I don't know if it had anything to do with it, but he said that even in adults, he knew. You know, he's not an expert on babies because he's an OB, but he was like, I know that in adults, if you're on this medication for too long, it'll start shutting down your other organs.
Yeah.
And so we don't know if that had something to do with it. But as far as we know on the death certificate, they just put that she was preterm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's so tragic.
Lot, especially for, you know, it was a week and a half of just everything falling downhill, and we wanted to hold out hope. Even while I was in the hospital, you know, I know what they're saying. I knew what they were saying, but it's like, you don't want to just be like, okay, just be done with it. Like, we were like, no, like, let's give her some time, see if something gets better. We even had one of the nurses went down when, because I was still pumping, because I was, you know, holding out hope that everything would get better. And so she went down to the NICU to take my milk down, and I guess saw her and was talking to the nurses. And she came back upstairs and was like, they want me to talk to you and let you understand, like, how, like, dire the situation is, and she's not going to get better, and that you need to make a difficult decision. And that alone, like, I did not cuss her out like I wanted to. I kept my composure and told her, like, we'll make that decision when we get there. So then when we went down to the NICU that Friday when I was getting checked out, they called the infectious disease, I guess, people in the hospital to get permission for me to see her because they knew she wasn't going to make it.
Yeah.
So they let me see her that day. I told the doctor what the nurse said, and she was like, I would never tell a nurse to come and tell you that you need to pull your child off of life support. She was like, I would not even make you make that decision unless we needed to be there.
Wow. Yeah, that seems pretty, I don't even have a word for it. I mean, you know, it's just angering, yeah. You know, how.
And she even looked at my husband and she was like, I just feel like you're not going to be okay. If you have to make, I'm like, you don't even know us. You don't know what we've been through. You don't know what we can handle. We're not just making our baby suffer because we think things are going to change. We were trying to hold out hope until we knew things would not change.
Yeah.
And
how did your older children, how did they handle?
My son, unfortunately, has had to go through this with us twice. He is 12, so he's been there since Silas. So it definitely angered him and still does more that he sees all my friends having their babies and doesn't understand why other people get to have their kids and we don't. My daughter just was excited to be a big sister and wanted a little sister, so she talks about her all the time. You know, we have their urns, and so she'll sit with their urns and, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, she just goes around telling people that her sister died. And I'm like, you can't do that. I'm like, I know we see it differently, but you can't just go telling everybody that, you know, your sister died.
Yeah, no, I don't remember where we were, but my younger son, Zen, who's 10, they were asking him some questions. I don't even remember where we were. And they were asking about if he had any brothers or sisters. And he said that he had a brother and that he had also had a sister, but she died. And I saw the person we were talking to, their face just go white. And I'm like, I'm happy that we're talking about her. And like, you guys know, you know, and I know April, your daughters too, they are able to really grasp everything and speak about it. And that makes me happy, but it does put you in those situations where maybe I really don't want to talk about this right now. You know, it's kids are. How old is your son now?
My son is 12, yeah. And my daughter's 6. So, you know, they were there. We made sure that. And I know to some people, it's probably like, why would you leave straight from the hospital and do it? And I'm like, because, like I said, I was in the funeral industry, so I knew how much time I had before she wouldn't look how she did, and I wanted to make sure that my kids got to hold her.
And that's such a gift that you gave them, too.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great gift. And I know, I can't imagine how difficult that was, and going through all the physical aspect of basically almost dying. And, Well, you mentioned being in the funeral business, but you're also a photographer. And I understand that you're doing a special project coming up. And I wanted you to chat about that a little bit.
I am. I wanted to do something that would not only honor, you know, my babies, but others as well, because I feel like most people just shut down when it comes to losses, especially, you know, in men. Like, me and my husband have learned to really depend on each other to get through all of this. And so I wanted to do an infant's pregnancy loss shoot, just to honor our families and our babies and let people know that they still matter. Even if they're not here, you have them. They're still part of your family. We held them. We connected to them. So on September 17th, I'm going to do pictures that day. I'm just doing a small $25 fee just to ensure people's participation, because I want people to understand, like, this is something that means the world to me, not just, oh, let's just do it because I've seen other people doing it. I want people to come, and you can bring your babies in their urns, or bring a picture or a stuffed animal or anything that means something to you that represents your child and your family. And so I'm excited to do this. You know, I hope more people do get signed up and just come and have that moment of having your pictures, because we always, anytime we do family pictures, we always take our urns. Those are our kids want them to be in it, so, you know, I want other people to feel that same way.
Well, I think that's so special. I know I'm really excited to participate, and April, I think you are as well. And so if somebody wanted to participate, what do they need to do?
You can go to my website, which is on Facebook right now, but it's Uniquely C-Wise Photography. And you'll see my picture on there. I'm actually holding both of my urns. And they can just contact me on there and get set up. I have it set up from 11 to 2. It'll be at Sutton Wilderness in Norman. So I'm going to have like a beautiful blue chair just for, you know, for people to sit on. But mostly I want, you know, I don't want too much in the background to where that's taking away what we're meant to be there for. So.
Well, that's fantastic. And if you're listening and you want to participate, please reach out and I'll make sure that I put the information with this podcast. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Courtney. It's been so nice getting
Courtney,
to chat with
you.
And I really look forward to seeing you in September and to take some really beautiful pictures.
Yes, thank you. I cannot wait.
This is April in Sydney for the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. Thank you for helping us to break the silence surrounding miscarriage, stillbirth, and infant loss. If you or someone you know is experiencing a loss, please visit kidsjoiningeternity.org for resources and support.
Thank you for listening to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. For more information, please visit kidsjoiningeternity.org.